Hours to Protect on Beat.
Well, for the past year, we've been delving into the concerning, sometimes confusing and even divisive subject of climate change. During our 50-part series, we've set out to inform you about the effects of climate change and arm you with the information and actions you need to make a change. This morning, we're going to talk to two Southeast-based environmental activists about what we learnt and what we need to do in the future to continue this battle of our lifetimes. But first, this week, we headed out into the region and asked you your thoughts on climate change.
I think climate change is a very big issue at the moment and it needs more awareness about it, especially as a teenager myself. I'm 17 and I think it should be more known about and talked about. Kind of feels like how people have done things in the past, like burning fossil fuels and kind of diesel cars and engines and those kind of things. It's normalised, and I feel like it will affect us in the near future because, of course, we have new technology coming out, but it does feel like we're kind of working backwards. It feels like it's on us now to figure something out.
The problem with climate change is that it takes years and years and years for the consequences of it to show. And while it absolutely is a thing and is real, it's very hard to convince people to fight a problem that you can't even see, because it takes years and years for the consequences to show. They're almost invisible.
It's been more like talked about in recent years, and there's more rain in than there used to be when I was younger.
Would you be nervous for your future?
Yeah, like, I don't really think that far, but like, I'd say it'll be really bad by the time I'm like 20.
I suppose the summers are supposed to get hotter and, you know, you see the glaciers melting and stuff. You know, obviously it's not going to be good for, you know, the world just in general. I actively love to recycle and, you know, collect glass, you know, I have a glass bin and compost, and, you know, I'm trying to do my bit at home. Yeah, definitely.
Just some of the voices in the Southeast and their thoughts on climate change. Well, it's been a pretty significant year for the environment, both negatively and positively. Lots of climate change, which is becoming quite evident now, but lots of climate action also. Let's have a listen back to some of what we learned thanks to talking to people across the region and beyond for our year-long series, Hours to Protect.
In Ireland, every day, 500,000 cups go to landfill. So the single-use disposable cups. So they are used once and they last for nearly 400 years.
A child could go through up to 5,000 disposable nappies during their time between birth and potty training, and these will take roughly 450 years to break down.
Anyone buying a plastic bottle of a soft drink and then throwing it on the beach, like, it's going to stay there or in the ocean or in the environment for 450 years. That's my lifetime, that's your lifetime, that's our dog's lifetime. That's everybody we know is gone, and that plastic bottle is still here. It's nuts, like, it's absolutely crazy stuff.
Every plastic toothbrush ever made still exists in some shape or form, you know. I found one in my garden from the 1950s. And it was in perfect condition, still had all the bristles and everything.
By switching off your engine, when you're stopped, you stop these emissions coming out too. Idling for any more than 10 seconds uses more fuel and produces more CO2 emissions than actually turning off and restarting your engine.
75% of people purchase based on sustainability practices in the company. So, you know, we're 100% behind that.
Tackling climate change with climate action. This is Hours to Protect on Beat 102-103.
Just some of the people I talked to over the year for Hours to Protect, and what a year it has been. Thanks to the activists, business owners, politicians, members of our councils, all who told me what they're doing and what we can do to reverse and stall the damage we have done to the environment. Joining me in studio this morning to discuss this subject is secondary school teacher Patrick Kirwan. He's a climate activist and teacher at Art School Namara in Tremor, and Louise Lawler, who is also a primary school teacher and an environmentalist and member of SureCan Environmental Forum in County Tipperary. You're both very welcome. And both of you were on episodes of Hours to Protect. Louise, you did a piece with me about your toy library in Clonmel in County Tipperary. And Patrick, you were on about your walking to school initiative in Art School Namara in Tremor in County Waterford. I think the start of this series, I was in a panic, I think. I was unsure of the vocabulary, from carbon neutral to emissions, landfills to sustainability. And it was all a bit of a minefield. But now I'm much more informed, thanks to people like you. But I'm wondering now if that in general, if that's the way it is in general, if people are more informed, or does the vocabulary and the science behind climate change intimidate people? Do you think that, Louise? That's what I've really experienced over the last 12 months.
Yeah, I think it's important to try and keep things simple, and then you can build your knowledge as you begin to take up new habits and begin to learn more about how you can make a difference individually, because we can have a huge impact individually on the environment.
And I feel that some people don't think that. You know, when we're saying to people, oh, maybe don't eat that or don't buy there, there's this idea that there's these giants out there somewhere with loads of money who are causing most of the problems. But what I have learned in these 12 months is that small things matter.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a new study out actually that shows that people don't realise the impact they can have. You know, just by reducing the amount of meat they eat every mm-hmm. week, you can have a huge impact. And you don't have to go fully plant-based. You can just eat an extra vegetarian meal a week, mm-hmm. cut out one portion of meat. Don't eat meat for your lunch maybe, and have it for your dinner, you know, and that can make a huge difference. And people, there's a new ESI study to show that people actually don't realise that impact. So yeah, there's a link between our knowledge and the reality of what we can do.
I think there's a big disconnect there. We see from reports from the EPA that people hear more about, you know, they're hearing more about climate change. There's a full agreement on that it's happening, and that a large proportion of people are worried. And even, which is really interesting, is that 8 out of 10 people see that climate action will improve our quality of life, which is all good. Mm. But then I think what's missing is that people don't understand the magnitude and scale of this emergency. And when you're talking about small actions, that can actually help to build public opinion and actually change hearts and minds.
Yeah.
And what's really important about that is that it actually then can affect politics mm-hmm. and policies.
Mm-hmm. And you only need 25% of people to change, and the impact will...
And the rest of people will follow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's such a small number if everybody began to change.
And that's 25% of your class, or 25% of your business, or 25% of your family. Mm. And I think, we know there's an article in the Business Post today. And, you know, when they surveyed people about European elections, the things that are coming out as kind of really high in priorities are like cost of living, immigration, energy costs. But then climate change and sustainability is very low on the list at 27% of people seeing that this is important. And it's actually, when you look at a local election survey, it's even down further at 20%.
Okay.
And what's interesting, you know, when you think about the year that's passed, you being on this programme, still, I'm getting an election leaflet in my door with the high priorities being listed, and not once mentioned climate breakdown or the loss of nature. And this is where actually we can have a really massive impact if we're actually talking to those people on our doors or in our email communications or whatever it is, and saying this is something that's actually really, really, really important to us.
Is it a case of it's really, really important, but it's not compelling? It mightn't be entertaining. Do you know what I mean?
Hugely. Well, the thing is, I actually get it, because we're all really busy. And there's lots of competing priorities. And this is coming back to that disconnect again. That if you actually, it takes a, like you just said, you've had a, you know, you've, we were talking before this, and you've had a year to build your own knowledge. It takes a while to actually internalize this. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, I was reading an article or a couple of articles in the Irish Times a few weeks ago, all published on the same day. The first article was talking about people who are losing their houses on the coast, who've lost their houses and will lose their houses on the coast. The second article talked about people who were flooded out in Roscommon. Neither of those articles mentioned climate breakdown, would you believe? Mm-hmm. And then if you're not mentioning climate breakdown, you're not then talking about the root causes of ending, you know, fossil fuel subsidies and getting off fossil fuels. And the third article, which is just amazing, you know, in terms of like mind-boggling, is they talked about people in Connemara who are up in arms at the scale of a wind farm project. And it's just like, and again, no mention of climate breakdown, no mention of ending fossil fuel subsidies, no mention of the impacts that are happening in Ireland, not to mention further afield.
And so, sorry, back to the vocabulary. What do you mean by climate breakdown?
So essentially, our climate is rapidly changing.
Okay.
It's the normal patterns are kind of breaking down, mm-hmm. and we're seeing. And I'm glad you're correcting the language.
See it with the
weather at the moment. Totally.
Totally.
I mean, is the sky going to be blue ever again?
Yeah.
It's so grey constantly mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. It's really changing.
And it's nuts. Like, you know, right now we're just in terms of the terminology, we've had a certain amount of heating, you know, since the Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. And like right now in this context, in Mexico, there are record temperatures of 47 degrees Celsius, and there are howler monkeys falling from the trees.
I saw this. Yes.
That's not normal.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. there's in India, in Bangalore, their summer is normally from March to May, and they normally get 34 degrees a peak in April. They've seen 34 degrees in February before the summer season this year. And we see the rain in Ireland and, mm-hmm. and the impact it has on farming. And scientists, which is really interesting, have said, top climate scientists have said that they believe, these are the experts, that we'll see doubling the amount of warming that we have already in less than 80 years.
Wow.
So, but the thing is, we're not acting.
No, there is that disconnect, as you said. Mm. Yeah.
Like, this is real.
Yeah. And is that because, you know, does it take a monkey falling dead from the tree for us to sit up and listen? And with that in mind, actually, can I play a clip from you from Professor Conor Murphy, who is a professor of geography and around climate change in Maynooth? And he was talking to me during the week, and we'll hear from him later on in this episode of Ours to Protect. But I asked him a little bit about the realities and when things start to directly affect us, that we start to realise the realities of climate change. And one of those realities is avian travel. We all know the stats about carbon emission and flying. About 2.4% of global CO2 emissions comes from aviation, and with other gases and water vapour trails, it produces around 5% of our global warming. But I think what happened this week is really what might make people sit up and listen. And that are two extreme instances of turbulence. 8 passengers taken to hospital after a flight from Doha to Dublin experienced turbulence. And even to hear people with our accents saying that, you know, one guy's trousers were ripped. His turbulence was so bad and he was flung around so much. And then a week before, a passenger died and dozens were injured when a Singapore Airlines flight hit severe turbulence. I saw lots of comments on social media saying this was a direct result of climate change. So I asked Professor Conor Murphy, who lectures in geography and climate change, as I said, at Maynooth University, about this. And this is what he had to say about that.
When you think about climate change, it's about energy in the atmosphere. It's heat energy. And that causes instability. You remember from school and geography and science classes, warm air rises. So warmer air creates greater instability, and it's that instability in the atmosphere that creates turbulence. So again, while turbulence can be very small scale and difficult to look in our climate models to ask what will turbulence be like in the future, we would expect greater turbulence with a warmer atmosphere. So it's not a huge surprise.
Now, that would make me reconsider flying. It really would. That would have a direct effect. You know, that's climate change having a direct effect on my life. Not carbon emissions and the amount of fuel that is used when flying, but the fact that I don't really like flying as it starts, to think that I could experience extreme turbulence would make me think no to a flight.
Well, I think there's lots of stuff happening in Ireland, you know, and I think the issue is that when it does affect us, it'll be a reactive response rather than actually a planned response to mitigate that impact and effect. And this is where we kind of need visionary leadership. But in Ireland, I think, you know, if we look at food security, we're not food secure.
Mm, no.
So, I mean, it's crazy that like in we have 67% of our land is agriculture, used for agriculture in Ireland. And 3/4 the size of Dublin is the area of land that's used to grow fruit and veg.
Mm.
You know, we import the rest. And so we're not kind of really planning for the future, because we see, you know, in other countries, you're just saying there, Louise, that we might have to import our potatoes. But actually other countries are suffering, you know, with growing their veg because of droughts and floods. So we need to kind of plan properly here, and we're not.
Mm-hmm. I think as well, people, it's very overwhelming, the whole thing. People are already, we're all very, very busy. There's so much pressures on people to get places, sports, after school activities. You know, the whole thing is very overwhelming. And I do think that for families and, you know, busy people, their jobs are, you know, I see my friends in Dublin that work very long hours. Mm-hmm. You know, they go home late in the evening. There's just so much going on in the world that, you know, add climate to that. And, mm-hmm. you know, we can just put off that worry, mm-hmm. block it out.
Oh, totally. And people can feel really preached to as well, can't they?
Yeah. And you know, but if it's easy for us to do, we're more likely to do it. Totally. So that's why, you know, for example, in Tipperary now, I started the toy libraries because it's an easy way for people to access toys rather than going out to buy them. Mm-hmm. And it's about making greener living more accessible.
Yes, very good. Okay, let's take a break. In part two of Hours to Protect, we're going to hear back again from Professor Conor Murphy from Maynooth University on how climate change has affected his southeast county. And we're going to get some advice from Louise and Patrick on what we can do going forward as individuals.
Hours to Protect is funded by Commission na Mban with a television licence fee and is a partnership between Beat 102-103 and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. Check out hourstoprotect.ie for more info. Hours to Protect on Beat.
Professor Conor Murphy is a professor of geography at Maynooth University, looking at climate change, particularly for Ireland. Conor is a North Wexford native, and he's been looking at the effect that climate change has had on his home county. And as he told me this week, the evidence is stark.
I can understand how climate change is hard to, I guess, internalise for people to answer the question, what does this actually mean for me? But when we look at climate change in Wexford, we're seeing clear evidence of the emergence of what we call a climate change signal. So we're seeing temperatures increase. That's consistent with what we see across Ireland and across the globe. And we're also seeing rainfall extremes increase in particular. So when we have a warmer atmosphere, it holds more moisture. And when rain falls, it falls more intensely. And that's something that people pick up in their day-to-day lives. In Kylenear and in North Wexford, I've often have locals, farmers, people remarking on how much rainfall has changed. And that's also in the long-term rainfall records. So that's a very clear signal of change that people are seeing and noticing around them.
This is having a real impact on Wexford.
So you remember back to last autumn and the harvest, large parts of the south of the county had problems in even harvesting grain and had to leave that grain in the ground because conditions were so poor in terms of heavy rainfall.
More intense flood events are expected with climate change.
So places like Enniscorthy that have had a long history of flooding, we expect to see the risk of flooding increase there.
Parts of the Wexford coastline has had a problem with erosion for decades, but climate change has exacerbated that.
It's difficult to say it's all climate change. It's not. There's, you know, erosion and deposition happens in coastal areas, but being made worse by climate change. So, you know, when we talk about climate change, it's an increase in temperature, it's an increase in rainfall extremes, but it's also an increase in sea level rise. And that increase in sea level is coming from melting of major ice sheets, but also warming of ocean water itself.
Some dramatic changes have been seen in parts of Wexford.
We had our MSc Climate Change at Maynooth University down in Kilpatrick and Cortown this year, measuring the rate of erosion, loss of land in Kilpatrick, which is around the Castletown area, has lost about 250 metres of its coast in 100 years, 120 years. That's remarkable. And when we look at historical maps and tracking it, we're seeing that rate of erosion increasing substantially. So things are speeding up. Climate change is there in the background with sea level rise, and it's increasing the rate of erosion. The future that young people of today are going to face is very much in our hands now. If we're successful at reducing greenhouse gas emissions, those kind of future extremes are not as bad. But if we continue as business as usual, there are some serious challenges ahead.
But Professor Conor Murphy does see a change in people's attitudes to climate change.
I see the start of a change in outlook, and what gives me optimism for the future is young people and their recognition of this challenge as being crucial. In terms of the environment, resources, their jobs, their farming into the future, their local environments. You know, there's many stories from Cortown about the sadness, the beach is gone, and children of today not being able to enjoy the core time that their parents did in the past. So avoiding those kinds of things into the future is about really changing our behavior towards greenhouse gas emissions. The young people are leading this, the younger generations are leading it, and they need to be listened to by politicians.
There you go, some pretty stark facts from Dr. Conor Murphy, but you know, some positivity in there as well, that people's attitudes are changing. I'm joined by Patrick Kirwan and Louise Lawler, both environmentalists, but both teachers. You're a secondary school teacher in Art School Namara in Tremor, Patrick, and you're a primary school teacher, Louise. Where are you a primary school teacher?
In Clare, Bunscoil na Cathrach.
In County Tipperary. Do you think the future is bright when it comes to climate change and your students or young people in general?
I think it's undecided.
Okay.
I think there's a lot to fight for.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, as what is it, Mary Robinson said, or one of the people that she works with, our best days could be ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
And they could. But as Greta Thunberg says, you know, there's no point in hoping, you know, like look for action, because when you see action, hope is everywhere. And actually sitting here, you know, and having talked to Louise before this and, you know, the interview today, like Louise fills me with hope because it's actually like there's so much stuff that she's doing.
Yeah.
And I just like, and it's really enticing because like, mm-hmm. it's like basically you're speaking about resilience, community. Who wouldn't want to get involved in that?
Mm-hmm.
But we just, the thing is, we need to get more people on board and we need to do it quicker.
I felt the same, Patrick, when I was talking to you. Is, you know, a secondary school teacher, yes. You know, he's talking to the young people. They have the future in their hands. They will influence their parents. I think the power of connections is where it's at. You know, we connect and we'll be stronger together to fight this. And community.
Do people want to connect when it comes to climate change? It's like we said at the start, are they intimidated by it or do they feel preached to?
Yeah, that's where you have to be careful. Mm. You have to be careful to try and bring people together for themselves to make a change that will better their own lives and not frighten them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing, when you make it personal for people
and
they understand it, then they can actually connect into it. And I feel like, you know, that previous speaker that you had on there, mm-hmm. you know, talks about he feels optimistic, you know, when he thinks about youth. And I do too. But actually, they're not going to be in the positions of power are in now to make the changes that need to be made. And I want to read you one comment by a student in mm-hmm. Art School called Kathleen. She wrote this in her environmental leadership development portfolio of this year. And I thought it was really striking. She said, "I'm truly committed to teaching people about the environment and explaining everything to them. I especially think teaching current students is extremely important as they are more likely to listen and they can affect change. Older people are more difficult to talk to at all about this topic because they think of cost before they think of solutions and the future of the planet. Reaching out to first, second and third years and getting them involved with making changes could actually lead to something. Older people often think, well, I've lived my life," and she says in brackets, "I've genuinely heard this," or that it's too late to do something. Both are excuses.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't bothered or simply don't want to change their behaviour, regardless of how they know it will end. At all of that is why I'm so committed to promoting this programme and pushing for students to be as involved as possible with it and educating them not just on what's going on, but also all the things that we need to protect.
Mm-hmm.
How powerful is that?
So powerful. That goes back to what you were saying about the list of things that are important to people in the upcoming elections and how, you know, all those things that they said were all around cost, you know, energy costs, housing. So, you know, in one sense, I suppose as we get older, they're the things we do have to think about. But they're almost interchangeable to climate change as well and climate action. So are there, you know, what can we do? We're running up to a local and European election. What advice would you give to people when it comes to climate change and maybe activating those politicians or those future politicians?
Yeah, well, when they come to your door, tell them, you know, we want more protection for nature. In our country, protect our hedgerows. Our hedgerows are so important mm-hmm. in Ireland.
Like you can see that, like, I think climate and nature are treated as two different things,
yeah,
but actually they're one and the same.
Yeah.
And I ask the kids, like, what do you see advertised in the news when it comes to climate action? And they see, you know, wind turbines and solar farms, which are crucial and really, really important. But all that is doing is actually stopping us emitting more, you know, emissions into the atmosphere or carbon dioxide heat trapping gases. But the one thing that isn't advertised in the news is nature, because that's what's going to remove all this stuff in the first place. And we can see in Europe, there's a big pushback on the nature restoration law. And that's just like, at this stage in the game, crazy.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Why is there a big pushback?
Because, well, and it's complicated because there's misinformation out there in terms of how this will impact farmers. And I feel for the farming community because, like, even now at this stage in the game, like, when you hear all this stuff on social media, who do you believe, you know? So it's very easy to kind of, like, be susceptible to kind of the misinformation that's out there. What I would say is that we are... With politics, we are short-term thinkers rather than long-term thinkers. And we need to be thinking like 10, 20, 30 years down the road. And politicians think like that, but so do we. We are short-term thinking. So like when you are, you know, getting up to answer the door to a politician or you're communicating with them, are you thinking about yourself right now or are you thinking about your child? Because we really need you to think about your child. And don't just think about the pothole outside on the road. You know, I'd be looking again 10 or 20 years down the line. And if you're interested in, you know, cost of living or housing or immigration, whatever that may be, climate breakdown and the loss of nature exacerbates every single ill that we already have in society. So that should be your kind of your top priority, really.
Yeah. Well, lots to unpack there, as we have done over the last year of Hours to Protect. Thank you so much for coming in. That is Louise Lawler from County Tipperary, from the Shorecan Environmental Forum, but also the Toy Library. How can people find out more details about the Toy Library? Or maybe if they're interested in setting it up themselves.
Yeah, well, I'd love to give anyone advice. So on my through my own social media, I try to promote easy ways for people to live more sustainably. And I share the Toy Library there. And that's my handle is just Louise Lawler.
Okay.
And on Instagram.
On Instagram.
Yeah. And at the moment, we're setting up a new website for Shorecan. So that'll be hopefully online soon, but it's not set up yet.
Great. And people can get involved in the forum if they want to as well, if they're from County Tipperary.
Yeah, we'd love to have some new members and anybody who has any concern for the environment. You know, it's great, but that gives me so much optimism and hope, like meeting people like Paddy and yourself who care for the environment. And the same when I go to my environmental group meetings and we do initiatives together. We do, you know, other things like clothes swap shops, do work on planting trees around Clonmel and everything. And just getting together, it's so inspiring to meet other people who care and to work together.
Patrick, thanks a million for coming in as well. You're just finishing up, of course, with Art School Namara for another summer. What are you going to be doing for the summer? Doing lots of activism for the environment or just chilling out in your back garden?
Well, first off, I'm getting on a ferry to go to Spain on a 3-week cycling trip.
We never spoke about this. You have chosen not to fly anymore. So you have taken that leap.
I have taken that leap.
Yeah.
And it's only something I could come to recently because I was saying to you that I had a house that I needed to sell in England to get set back up here. And that happened last summer. So I could finally, and I was relieved to make that decision. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's me, you know, is for me personally. Again, I'm not judging anyone who does fly.
Yeah.
But I'm basically, so I can make that decision and it makes me happier because I feel like I've got some sense of phantom control on what's going on, but it's one meaningful action that I can take, and you know I can afford to take the ferry, which is actually quite expensive, to which is something that we need to address
another,
as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Another conversation.
You know, to Spain for the summer, but otherwise I'll be working on the Irish School Sustainability Network over the summer with colleagues. And that's really exciting. We're currently kind of looking at funding for projects and we've seen, like when it comes to nature, teachers are super interested and they are really kind of trying to kind of engage their schools in that. And we see an uptake in some of the initiatives. So we're kind of looking at how we can make things better for them.
Brilliant. Well, and great.
I love the way that you're reducing you've cut out flying. And you said it's a thing you can do that's a meaningful change. And there's different levels of meaningful change as well. You know, like if you look at clothes, I'll just finish now with this.
Yeah, of course.
One small thing, like even if you can't go buy secondhand clothes yet, you're not there yet. what about if you just cut out buying sequins? Because sequins go into the washing machine and they go into our washer table and they fall off clothes. So just cut out maybe buying sequins and clothes with bits of plastic on them. And then maybe another step after that, you might look at what the clothes are made out of. Maybe cut out polyester in clothes and go for more wools and cottons, which are more natural. So, you know, there's different levels and you can make a difference.
Thank you so much for both coming
in. Thanks so much for having us.
Of course, you can listen back to our 52 episodes of Hours to Protect on beat102103.com. There is a survey up there as well if you want to take it about your carbon footprint. But in the meantime, let's finish up our year-long climate change and climate action project by hearing what some of our Beat listeners learned from Hours to Protect.
Hours to Protect on Beat.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm currently studying city planning and environmental policy, and I found Hours to Protect great, especially when we mentioned a lot of the good news, because I find it can get dragged down with all the bad news currently, and it kind of uplifts everybody's spirits and let you know that the work you're doing isn't worth nothing.
So I was going to get a Stanley cup, but then after listening to Hours Protect, I decided against it, and I have just a normal water bottle and it's perfect. I realised that they're not great for the environment because people buy them and then they only use them for a little while and then they throw them away, or they like collect them. It's like a collectible now at this stage. Like, people collect limited edition ones and they're so expensive. Like, so you're better off just getting a normal water bottle. You get longer out of it.
So I'd be a little bit more conscious about clothes and what clothes I buy and where I get them from. I'm kind of trying to stay away from online shopping and trying to support local a little bit more and shopping in town.
Hours to Protect is funded by Commission na Mban with a television licence fee and is a partnership between Beat 102-103 and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. Check out hourstoprotect.ie for more info.